It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in a few minutes, the surprising health benefits of singing.
First, the two major party candidates running for Wisconsin's only open congressional seat showed more differences during the second debate of their campaign. The battle in the 6th District in central and eastern Wisconsin is between Democrat Mark Harris and Republican Glenn Grothman. Harris contends Grothman is too conservative, even for a GOP-leaning district. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Republican Tom Petri has represented the 6th Congressional District since Jimmy Carter was president. But shortly after GOP State Senator Glenn Grothman announced he was taking on Petri this year, the moderate Petri decided to retire. 10 years ago, Grothman defeated moderate GOP State Senator Mary Panzer when Grothman wanted to move up from the state assembly. During that campaign, a woman named Renee held a sign with one of the letters of Grothman's last name.
I'm holding the M for Grothman, because he is the man.
Grothman was barely the GOP voter's man 2 months ago when he narrowly won the Republican congressional primary against three other candidates. Democrats quickly began issuing press releases highlighting some of the controversial statements Grothman has made during 20 years in the state legislature. Statements about equal pay for women, restricting abortion, criticizing immigrants, the Martin Luther King state holiday, and other topics.
I would like to welcome you today to the debate featuring the candidates for the 6th Congressional District.
This morning, during a forum carried on WOSH Radio, Grothman remained outspoken. For one thing, he criticized proposed Environmental Protection Agency rules aimed at reducing carbon dioxide emissions and easing climate change.
And we really haven't had any global warming in this country for about 15 years now. So as the result, I think part of it is addressing a problem that we may find out is not a problem at all.
Grothman says the science regarding climate change is not settled. Grothman's Democratic opponent is Winnebago County Executive Mark Harris. Harris says climate change is probably a settled science.
That to the extent that it's man-made or natural, there's probably some room for debate. But the fact that there is global warming occurring is really hard to deny if you look at pictures of the polar ice caps.
So Harris says it makes sense to reduce carbon emissions and boost industries that create alternative forms of energy. The two candidates have also been out separately speaking to smaller groups.
Good afternoon, everyone.
This week at a senior's home in Mequon, Mark Harris told roughly 30 people about his hopes for a modest increase in the minimum wage to leave women in control of their health care decisions, to help college students struggling with loans, and protect Social Security by raising the amount of income subject to Social Security taxes. It's a platform that sounds good to Mequon resident Jack Prater, who used to vote Republican but more recently has sided with Democrats. Prater says he sees Harris as someone who can be bipartisan.
Anyone who has a record in which they're saying they can work with other parties and will want to try to work with other parties and have proven in the past that they can work with other parties, anyone in that situation deserves our vote.
But Harris did not win over everyone at the Mequon event. Businessman David Charney says he's leaning towards State Senator Grothman because of the Republicans' opposition to raising the minimum wage and general pro-business agenda. Charney says he does not agree with everything Grothman has said.
At the end of the day, he's going to represent, yes, the people in the district, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to represent all the ideals that I represent with.
Libertarian Gus Fahrendorf is also on the November ballot. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A new study from Sweden's Gothenburg University shows some surprising benefits for singing, alongside benefits that show singing supports emotional, social, and mental well-being. New science says singing in a choir is good for the heart. Here's the Netherlands Radio Choir singing a song by Gautier.
Now and then.
Turns out that when people sing together, even famous pop songs, their heart rates drop, their heart rhythms synchronize. Researchers say the effect is comparable to yoga.
Joining us now to talk about why singing feels good and how we can get more of it into our lives is Stephanie Elkin. She's a singer, musician, and last but not least, she's the host of WPR Simply Folk. Stephanie, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Veronica. Thanks for having me back.
Well, what do you think of this news that singing turns out to have a host of benefits, social, emotional, and now heart health?
Well, I think we've known some of it for a long time, but the heart study was fascinating. And when you look online, you could see how the heartbeats are all different, and then all of a sudden they come together and synchronize. And that was kind of mind-blowing for me.
Have you had an experience like this as a singer in choirs yourself?
Well, I don't know about matching other people's heartbeats, but I've certainly experienced the feel-good part of singing, and started as a kid singing in church choirs and then sang in every, I was one of those geeks who sang in every ensemble in high school. And then even in college, I wasn't a music major, but I always took, you know, some kind of chorus or choir because I think subconsciously I knew it was lifting me up and helping me cope. And then I didn't return to it until maybe 10 years later as an adult. And I started singing with a choir in Pennsylvania, the Bach Choir of Bethlehem. And after a couple of times, I realized that I was driving home from rehearsal every week absolutely high as a kite. You know, the endorphins were going, and yeah, it's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I've sung in a lot of choirs over the years, and I was trying to think back to see if I ever remembered feeling like my heart was somehow supported or nourished. And I don't remember that, but I remember loving to sing in choirs.
Well, we know that it raises endorphins. We know that taking in all of that oxygen and you're breathing together, so you're already breathing together, and they think that's probably part of why the heart rate synchronizes. But you're also concentrating really hard on something, so you have that mindful piece of it, too, where your mind's not racing thinking about what you're going to make for dinner or, you know, that kind of thing.
Now, what about the civilians out there? A lot of us are not going to be in a professional choir, even a church choir or a band. We're not going to have cause to get together with people and sing. How can the rest of us get out there and sing?
Well, you can do it in the car with your family, and that way it doesn't really bother anybody. But there are a lot of opportunities even for complete amateurs. I mean, it would be useful to learn music to some degree, not necessarily really sight singing or being a pro, but for instance, here in Madison, we have the Madison Choral Union through the UW, and there's no auditions for that. Anybody can join that. And I was looking online at resources. There is, if you look up Wisconsin music groups, there are literally hundreds and thousands of church groups, if you look at spiritual institutions that have some kind of shared music practice.
Now, Rob, I have to call you out. You're talking about civilians and including yourself. You sing all the time in the office.
I know. Well, a little bit here and there. But, you know, and I'll sing at home and in the car. But, yeah, I'm not with a formal singing organization. I sing, quote, in my band from time to time, but that's just when absolutely necessary.
But I think that's part of the takeaway here, that it doesn't have to be something that's horribly formalized. You know, you can sing in a choir and can certainly get benefits there, but it seems as though singing in general, just working it back into your life, is probably going to be a good thing for your health.
Well, and it's not only, we've just talked about the endorphins and the oxygen and the heart rate and everything else, but there's also the social aspect of it. It gets you out of your house, out of what you're doing, maybe once a week, whatever it is, and you're bonding with others. You form these social bonds. And that's really important for humans, especially, you know, many of us are introverts, and it's hard to make ourselves do that. But if you can, it really strengthens your mental health. And some of the studies have shown that people that sing in choirs and choruses and things like that are more resilient. They're able to respond better to trauma and grief and things like that, so that there are a lot of mental health benefits, not just the physical benefits.
We're talking with Stephanie Elkins about the power of singing. New research from Sweden shows that singing in a choir has positive outcomes for our heart health. Other studies show it's good for emotional and social well-being, too.
So with all that in mind, do you make time to sing? Do you keep it confined to the car and the shower? Is that enough for you? Do you get that lift that that we're talking about? Or do you maybe sing in a choir and agree with the positive health findings there? And what do you think it is about singing that makes us feel good, especially in a group? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Stephanie Elkins from WPR now about the power of singing. New research out of the University of Gothenburg says there's a lot of health benefits when it comes to singing, including heart benefits. It is calming. It lowers your heart rate, seemingly your blood pressure. There are social bonding aspects of it, and also good for emotional health.
And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Do you sing? Do you sing in front of other humans? Do you sing with other humans? If not, why not? What holds you back? Shyness? Introversion? Fear of just having a bad singing voice? Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let me take our first caller now. Cynthia joins us from Menominee. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. I sing. I sing to grandchildren, I sing to myself, I sing when I'm horseback riding, and last year I started singing with our local Joyful Noise Choir, and it is so much fun. It is a group of disabled and able-bodied community members. We make a joyful noise, and we put on a concert twice a year.
And how has it made you feel, all this singing?
Oh, I love it. I'm a song leader at church, too.
Wow,
and I can break into song for the grandchildren. And I've never been that good a singer, but I love it.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing your experience with us, Cynthia. And she's saying she's never been a great singer, but yet she's got a life that is, you know, riddled with song in a good way.
And that's what it's all about. And it's about the community, and it's the physical aspects of it. It's the whole package. Singing really is more than just the melody line. It's, and she's saying it's disabled and able-bodied people coming together, and she said she's not a great singer. I mean, that's the lesson right there.
That takes me back to my childhood in church. My grandma was a great singer and was in the choir. My grandfather, we'd battle to not sit next to him because tone deaf, but he loved singing. He belted it out. And I mean, we always loved that about him, too. He really enjoyed his singing, off key as it was. So you don't have to be good to enjoy it, Stephanie, and get the benefits.
No, you don't. And an interesting part of this study was that hymn tunes were particularly powerful. Probably, they think, because the tempo is a little bit slower. So it regulates your breathing in a different way. And so many spiritual traditions have music as a part of it, and it makes the congregation feel maybe a little more cohesive. But there's also this physical aspect now that we know about.
Yeah, so interesting. Well, let's take another caller next. Margo joins us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Margo.
Hi there. I just wanted to say it was a really interesting program, and it's actually inspiring me to get back into looking into choirs. I used to do a lot of choral singing when I was growing up, but I did notice something. I used to also sing in the shower and sing around the house a lot, and I went through some episodes of major depression, and I realized that I really wasn't singing anymore, that I wasn't singing ever in the shower, and I kind of actually got myself to start just kind of try to sing sometimes, and that actually I found was one thing that sort of helped my mood some. So I think you're right, the research is, I can see it being ringing very true in my own life. So
great. Well, thank you so much, Margo, for sharing what you've experienced with singing. And I think that is what the researchers are going to be looking into next. You know, they were surprised at, you know, the strength of this, these results for health benefits. And they want to know if there are more applications, if we should take singing more seriously, and maybe in things like depression.
Well, it was interesting. I was just talking to one of the WPR volunteers who sings once a week, and she missed last week. And we were talking about this upcoming study, this show right today. And she said, I felt like I missed my therapy. Like, you know, you get kind of antsy and you need, it's like her weekly therapy. And she missed it and noticed the lack of it. So, you know, I think in terms of depression, there's also some research in nursing homes with elderly people coming together and singing and showing that that really improves the rates of depression. So I think there are many, many applications, and it'll be interesting to see how the research continues.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story. We'll go now to Cole with us in Madison. Cole, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your singing story, Cole?
So as I speak here, I'm driving down to Madison. I'm a senior pre-med student up in Northern Michigan University, and I'm driving down to look for housing at the UW School of Medicine. And I sing up in Northern in an a cappella group, and it's really not a group made up of music majors. We have education majors, science majors, math majors, and it's turned into kind of a group that helps us get away from all the like adult parts of our world every day, and we get to just kind of add that balance to our lives, and it's really beneficial for everyone to get together and have that balance.
And Cole, does that get you through the Marquette winter?
Yeah, it definitely does.
Cole, thanks a lot. So again, they're not the music majors, they're not the regular songsters, but they get a lot out of it.
You can't.
Right, and I think everyone benefits too.
Everyone benefits, no matter what your level. And a cappella singing is really fun because you don't need any support. It's just the voices. There's no instruments required. And there's a sense of togetherness with that. You're looking at each other. You're singing together. And it lifts you. All kinds of singing lift you. But I particularly enjoy a cappella singing. Veronica, you're a singer, too. Do you do regular singing?
I don't as much as I used to. I'd love to get back into it. I'm actually thinking, you know, Cole's call made me think, you know, maybe I should do an experiment on myself and try to sing every day this winter and see if the winter is better.
That's a great idea.
Maybe we need a WPR choir.
There's enough talent here.
The winter singers.
We have a lot of singers. Yes.
All right, let's
and
take
for
that.
Your pledge of, oh, no, no, wait. I'm getting way ahead of
Hang
myself
on there.
Here.
All right, that's you can save that for later. All right, Suzelle is going to join us next. She's in Wauwatosa. Hi, Suzelle.
Hi, I am. What a wonderful program. I'm a singer. I sing every day. I sing in the car. I sing in the shower. I sing in my kitchen. And I'm also a Unitarian Universalist minister, so I sing in church a lot on Sundays. And I just want to speak to the beauty of chanting and how chanting can really take people to a really deep, meditative, relaxing, spiritual kind of place. Whether you're chanting by yourself or chanting with a group, you know, lots of people have spoken to other aspects of singing, but that's one I find particularly powerful, not just for myself, but also the people who I work with.
Suzelle, what kind of chanting are you referring to? Sort of, there's, you know, Gregorian chants, there's Buddhist chants. What kind do you like?
Well, and there's also like earth-based, pagan type chanting as well, which can be very beautiful. One of the things that we've done in my congregation is a Taizé-style chanting, where there's a whole hour of silence, chanting, and then readings. And the three things alternate, and it really brings people into a very unitive kind of space, both where people feel very connected to each other and connected to the universe.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that. And Suzelle has a life that's full of song as well. And chanting. What about chanting, Stephanie?
Well, chanting's been used for millennia to shift your mind a little bit. And if you think about some of the medieval chants and the Gregorian chants that you referred to, Veronica, it's designed for a group to come together and to make this sound. And think about the architecture that it was sung in, for the music to kind of rise and swirl around and put you in a completely different space where you're not in the here and now. You're in a heavenly place. You're in, you know, in an elated space, a totally different kind of a feel.
It's like kirtan and yoga traditions where you get kind of ecstatic.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And she mentioned Taizé, and we've had a couple of posts on our WPR events page for those kinds of services, so you can always check that.
A few moments for another call. Dean with us now on the line in Racine. Dean, hi.
Hey, how are you, Ben? I'm a singer that has been on the radio on Stephanie's show. I'm with a group called Bounding Maine.
Hi, Dean. Nice to hear from you.
How have you been?
I've been just fine. And a fine singing group, Bounding Maine, is for sure.
Briefly, what do you get out of singing in a group, Dean?
Well, I'll tell you what. I put a group together just kind of on a whim about 12 years ago, and I'd been doing performance and stage combat, but the joy and communication that being in a vocal group has brought to me has been just overwhelming. It's been a part of my life that came in unexpectedly, but now we perform all over the U.S. and Europe, and it's just been incredible.
That's great. Dean, thanks so much. Thanks to everybody. A lot of callers still with wonderful stories to share. Sorry we can't get to all of them
you
today.
You could post your stories, though, on the Central Time Facebook page and keep that conversation going. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Such a great topic.
Stephanie Elkins is a singer, musician, and she's the host of WPR Simply Folk.
Coming up, polls show a close race for governor, but the new WPR St. Norbert College survey breaks down why voters support their candidates or why they haven't made up their minds quite yet. We'll get the details coming up. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash, we don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. Get to win in our place. They have a lot to say for eyes. To create a different kind of eyes. Let me be your ruler.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. As turning leaves signal another Wisconsin autumn, the Mid-Continent Railway Museum gets popular. It's an outdoor living museum, an operating railroad recreating the small-town short line way of life during the golden age of railroading, with operating trains and restored railroad cars to take passengers along a scenic 7-mile route that begins in North Freedom, Wisconsin.
Jeffrey Bloom joins us now. He's the president of the Mid-Continent Railway Museum. Jeffrey, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, first, paint us a picture. What does the leaf scene look like right now at the train windows?
Well, if I were at the museum right now and looking out the train window, we'd be past peak. The peak colors appeared last weekend, the 18th and 19th, when we ran our pumpkin special. But right now, we're past peak.
So this is something that for people to put on their calendars, look ahead to next year, but there's still got to be some beautiful scenery out there. What route does the train take?
The train leaves our depot at the museum just west of the village of North Freedom, and then it meanders in a south-southwesterly direction 3.5 miles to the end of the track, and it goes alongside of a swampy area where the Baraboo River used to run, but it changed course. Then it goes through farm fields, corn fields, soybean, and then it goes through a woods, and then past some more farm fields, and then it goes through the little mining town of LaRue, where it crosses the Sealy Creek trestle. And then it goes through a wooded, swampy area all the way to end the track at an area we call Quartzsite Lake. And the colors on all the trees, because many of them are maple trees along the way, very brilliant hues of reds, oranges, yellows. And then off in the distance, the riders can see what is known as the Baraboo Bluffs, 4 or 5 miles distant. And when the sun is out, of course, that's just all bright with colors.
Now, do you just run during the fall color season, or can we take the train ride other parts of the year as well?
The museum operates trains beginning the Mother's Day weekend, and we run weekends in May. And then when school's let out, about the 8th of June, we open up 7 days a week. And then when September rolls around and the kids go back to school, then we go weekends again until the third weekend in October. And the second weekend in October is what we call our autumn color trains. And the third weekend in October is the pumpkin special, where we have a pumpkin farmer bring in a lot of pumpkins at the end of the track. And the people ride the train and they can buy a pumpkin from the farmer, and then they haul it back on the train.
Now let's hear about these trains a little bit more. What kind are they?
Mid-Continent strives to collect equipment from the 1884 to 1916 era, known as the Golden Age of Railroading. However, that old equipment is very historic and kind of fragile. What we operate on a daily basis is passenger cars that are made of all steel, but they were built in 1914, so they still got that old look. We would love to run our trains with steam locomotives, but all of our steam locomotives are out of service right now due to needing heavy repairs. And when I say heavy repairs, I mean over $1 million.
Wow.
So we're running vintage diesel locomotives. One of our star attractions is a 1944 Alco Model S1 switch engine. And that's historic in itself because Alco hasn't built locomotives since 1969. And the diesels will pull like two coaches and a historic wooden caboose on our normal runs.
Now, what is, I know a lot of people love older trains. What's the appeal? What's the allure of seeing these trains and actually riding them in action?
Well, the difference between riding our train rather than a modern commuter train or Amtrak, our equipment is all old. You go up the steps on the cars, they're open platforms, then you go in a doorway to go in the coach, you can slide the windows open, and of course, you know, modern railroad cars today, you can't open the windows, everything is air-conditioned, and they're the old-fashioned flip-over seats, and our conductor comes through the train with a vintage uniform on to punch tickets, just like it was done in the old days. We try to recreate a small, short-line railroad environment. And with the equipment we're using, being some of it's 1914 and the locomotive's 1944, I guess you'd have to say they'd step back in time to 1944.
Wow. Well, aside from that, what else does the museum have in its collection?
The museum has a very large collection. The prize are the wooden passenger and wooden freight cars. The oldest car we have was built in 1864, and then we have a group around 1903. And then when you start to get into the steel part, 1914 to 1915. We do have many of our old wooden coaches and freight cars completely restored. And the people that come to the museum, they not only can ride the train, but we do have a museum grounds also, and they can, you know, walk around at their leisure and look at this equipment. Mid-Continent has one of the largest collections of any railroad museum in the United States of vintage wooden railroad equipment. Many of the cars are one of a kind.
And Jeffrey, who does work like that? Who restores these old wooden passenger cars for you?
Mid-Continent is made up of around 500 members, and like all organizations of that size, about 80 are active. And we have departments within the museum. And the department that takes care of restoring the wooden equipment is what we call the Restorations Department. The Restorations Department is housed in a very large building. A building, you know, large enough to put 8 or 9 railroad cars in. And this group of members strives on doing the carpenter work, et cetera, et cetera. And we also, you know, sometimes have to hire outside contractors also.
So most of these people are volunteer members of the group showing up maybe on weekends or whenever they get time off to work on these cars?
We have a very large pool of volunteers on the weekends. Our trains on the weekends are run by volunteers. The mechanics working on the locomotives on the weekends are volunteers. And the people working on the wooden cars for restoration are volunteers. However, we do have paid staff also. The Monday through Friday trains in the summer, we have a paid crew on that because, you know, you wouldn't get enough volunteers for Monday through Friday when it's a work day. And the same thing with the restoration department. We do have some people that we do pay to do certain work that the volunteers, you know, wouldn't be able to do.
And Jeff, we've just got a couple of seconds here. Is there a wish list, one thing you'd like to add to your collection?
Well, our collection is pretty much complete. The big wish list is we do not have enough money to go around. That's the big wish list. If we had enough revenue coming in, you know, we could have a steam locomotive running pretty quickly.
All right, Jeffrey, we'll leave it there. Good luck with that, and thanks for joining us.
Okay.
That was Jeffrey Bloom. He's the president of the Mid-Continent Railway Museum in North Freedom, Wisconsin.